205 DGS on KMOX. Brad Young's going to be here in about half an hour to talk about all things legal. Ricky Horton's going to join us, talk about the big game tonight. Jim Talent's at 4 p.m. So we have a Dear Abby segment.
Well, I saw on, I think it was the New York Post, does Dear Abby still, and I just saw it while I was gathering my show prep today. This woman wrote into Abby and asked, you know, what should I do? We have these big family pool parties every summer, and I'm a grandma. My granddaughters are grown, you know, they're teenagers and 20-year-olds and so on and so forth. But they like to wear like a thong bikini to the family hangout. Mm. And I find it so upsetting that I feel like if they don't stop doing this, I'm going to stop coming to the pool parties. So Abby, being the manners and advice giver that she is, was like, look, you should talk, you know, you should talk to them and express how you feel. But at the end of the day, everybody's a grown adult. And if you don't like it, I guess you can stay home. Mm-hmm. But I was just wondering how you guys feel about that. I'm always a big proponent of, like, we have this in society now, it's like, if you're looking at me, it's your problem. And it's like, yeah, kind of. But also, I think you do need to be aware of, like, how you're making other people feel. If you're making other people uncomfortable. Exactly. If you're making other people uncomfortable with your choice of outfit, maybe you should just cover up a little bit more, or just know, like, save the thong for, like, the float trip with the friends,
I mean,
instead of around grandpa.
If it's in public and it's allowed, because I'm sure different places have different, you know, sets of standards. If it's in public and it's allowed, then it's everyone's problem. But the person wearing the thong or the revealing string bikini or the banana hammock, whatever the hell it happens to be. But if it's a family party with grandmas and grandpas, use a little decorum, you know?
Why can't families just talk to each other?
That's a great question. It's kind of like anyone who posts questions on Reddit and stuff. Yeah. The top comics are always like, did you try talking to him first?
Yeah, like, I get it if it was like a neighborhood thing and you maybe don't know certain neighbors very well and you didn't want to start a thing. I mean, if it's your family members, you should be able to, like, hey, come here for a second. Hey, can we just chill this out for a little bit here? And just, you know, grandma's here, makes her weird. Kids don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know. And, like, with families, you should be able to discuss stuff.
Yeah, how do you feel about it? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I always feel like when people do stuff like that, they're hoping, like, Dear Abby will do it for them. Like, Dear Abby,
okay. Yeah, she'll make the call. Like, I got you.
Send me their number. I'll talk to them.
What is kind of the rule? I haven't been to a public pool in so long. Like, do people wear thongs and stuff?
It's funny that we're talking about this because I had also seen a TikTok, which it's like, okay, this is my anecdotal evidence here, obviously. But I had seen a TikTok yesterday where this woman was talking about women who do wear the thong bikinis to, like, the water park. And she said her daughter was standing behind this woman in line, like, nose to butt with this lady, basically. And she has barely any fabric covering her. And she's like, maybe. It's one thing if it's the all-inclusive, like, adults-only resort, but if you're at Raging Rivers, for example, maybe cover your butt a little bit more.
Did you guys see the allegations against Alec Baldwin? The actual allegations?
Yes.
No.
Do you know him well enough to cite them off?
No, all I saw was the headline was that he has a long history of horseplay with guns.
Like, on that set, using that gun, he had pulled the trigger with a blank while pointing it at one of the coworkers.
Ooh, that's not good.
Mm-hmm. And while they were giving, so evidently, like, anytime you're going to use a firearm on set, there's, hey, you know, this is going to happen, but there's one big meeting, and he was the producer of the whole thing. They said that during the meeting, he was FaceTiming with someone from his family and not paying attention, and pretty bad.
Yeah, I defended him when this first happened.
Me
because
too.
a lot of people on the right really hate Alec Baldwin because he played Trump and he went after Trump so hard. So a lot of like Republican influencers were like, he murdered this woman on purpose. And I'm going, yeah. Of course he didn't do that. He didn't wake up that morning thinking, I'm going to shoot someone. That being said, it does seem like he has a very casual relationship with firearms, and this 100% could have been prevented. Like, his carelessness is what led to this. With the armor, too, of course.
I'm beginning to come around on that as well.
I wonder, I would like to see, I mean, you've seen these stats before, but I would like to see overall, speaking of, you know, casualness with guns, how many deaths a year are caused by just people not respecting guns?
Tons.
Not murders, not assaults, just I didn't respect my gun. You know, you always hear the stories of somebody cleaning it out and hadn't, you know, hadn't unloaded it before they cleaned it. Just respect your guns, people.
Or the people who, like, will accidentally shoot themselves in the leg or something because they didn't have the safety on. I mean,
one of the very first times I shot a gun as a grown-up, meaning, like, not as a, you know what a grown-up means.
Yeah. meaning not as a child.
What do you mean, Dave?
I was with a guy who owned the gun store that I was doing lives for, and they had a shooting range, and I had a .38 snub nose in my hand, and I'm standing, you know, getting ready to shoot, and I'm looking at him, talking to him, and thank God I'm pointing the gun down range, and it went off. Because I just didn't know how hard you had to pull the trigger. And he was like, there's your first lesson. There you go. That's how easy that happens. I mean, it was really startling. I said, shut up.
I said, I'm the man now.
I said, I'm trying to FaceTime here. Give me a break.
I'm the captain now is what Dave says.
So, Andrew, you have door-to-door salesmen coming around?
Yeah, I had no idea that this was such a thing. But I was off yesterday. It was a federal holiday, so I got to take it off of work. And
thanks for rubbing that in.
Yeah, you know, it's no big deal.
Must be nice.
It's whatever, but I was at home playing video games. But I, every time I've been home for like a holiday or I take a vacation day or whatever, three or four different like young dudes with clipboards will like pound on my door like multiple times. They like lap the neighborhood a few times knocking on these doors. And I'm thinking like, I'm not at home most of the time, and neither is my wife. Are they just like, my cat has really bad anxiety. I'm like, no wonder there's strangers banging on the door all day and night.
I love that
cat
sentence.
Cat has really bad anxiety.
Just horrible anxiety.
Poor Gigi.
But I had no idea that was such a thing, and I don't know what they want because I've never talked to them. One time I opened the door and I was like, go away, leave.
I hate talking to those people. I had the same thing in my neighborhood. And they're like, yeah, beautiful home. Just wondering if you have any, you know, projects scheduled because they're selling exteriors.
Yeah. And you're like, are you threatening me?
And I said, look, I have a client, you know, Triton. I have a client who does exteriors, and they're like, oh, client, what do you do for a living? And I just laughed. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to tell you what I do for a living.
Yeah, like, yeah, I'm trying to end this conversation. Yeah, I'm not trying to continue it.
I know what you're trying to do. I get it, but no.
And it's always, like, the like, broiest frat dudes that are like, what's up? I'm just like, walking around your neighborhood, and I was checking with everybody, every homeowner, and I'm like, go away. Leave me alone.
Yo,
stop knocking on the door.
You got a cat? I want to scare her real quick.
Yeah, the favorite play of mine is like, yeah, you know, we're just in your neighborhood. We were working on a couple of your neighbor's houses down the road and, you know, figured, we'll just check.
You know what's the worst? Because I often don't answer my door when people knock on it.
I never do. Because
I'm like, if I know you, then you have sent me a text.
Oh, if the doorbell rings, I'm like Anne Frank.
Well, the worst is when they... The worst is when they somehow know you're in there and they won't stop. They're like mad at you, like, hey, come get the door right now. I'm like, I don't have to do anything you say. I'm an adult.
Not yesterday, but the last time I was home, one of these bros was doing
meaning it. Not a child.
And he knew I was home because he could hear like whatever the TV or whatever super loud. So the last time he came around, he slammed the door really loud with his fist. And then like I got up to go yell at him and he was already like halfway down the street. Like he was clearly just... doing that.
Getting some aggression out.
Yeah, doing that to make me mad because he knew I wasn't answering the door for him.
Yeah, don't do that.
That's wrong.
I don't mean, like, just don't randomly knock on people's doors.
And Andrew, you have a public service announcement about raisins?
What?
I did not know this, but there is apparently a fatal amount of raisins that you can eat. I knew they were really bad for, like, cats and dogs.
Weird.
You're not supposed to even let a cat or a dog eat one single raisin. They are, like, very dangerous and toxic to cats and dogs.
Your cat must be really anxious about that.
She's super anxious about it. Every time I eat raisins, she's like, no. I know what you're trying to do. Get those things away from me. No, it's like 11, those little boxes, it's like 11 ounces. So if you eat like 11 of those boxes, it can be lethal.
That was your snack for a while here at work, right?
Yes.
You were eating raisins for a hot minute.
I love raisins.
Let me tell you why you're wrong. They sell boxes of raisins bigger than 11 ounces.
Right.
And they wouldn't sell a box of something
that
could kill you.
What do you find, Wheels? Wheels is on this.
Trying to figure this out because apparently it's true that can happen. The exact numbers.
Well, I'm sure there's a limit.
Are hard
everything.
To pinpoint, but it says experts estimate that it would take anywhere from 15 to 20 ounces of raisins.
That's 15,
closer than I thought.
That's three
that's
to
not
four
that
cups.
Many boxes.
Three to four cups.
I mean, when you put it like that, that's kind of
that's a lot of
raisins.
What kills you?
A lot of chewing.
Mainly due to the high levels of potassium.
You'd have to poop before that
happened. That can cause hyperkalemia, which I don't know what that is, but apparently that can lead to cardiac arrest.
Oof.
So don't eat that many raisins.
Yeah.
Who's ever like,
yeah, you saved a life.
I'm going to eat a whole bag.
Enjoy raisins in moderation.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have a crazy night tonight. I'm going to eat a whole bag.
Going nuts on the raisins.
Brad Young joining us at the bottom of the hour to talk about all things legal. We have Ricky Horton after that. Stairway to Kevin. We have Jim Talent at 4 p.m. to talk about Putin and Oon and all that sort of stuff. New study out, comprehensive study showing that there have never been a bigger percentage of kids in public school in special education. So there's a big debate going on whether it's just, yep, that's the way it is. We were underdiagnosing kids who needed to be in special ed, or if it's the opposite, if it's overdiagnosing kids who should be in the mainstream classes, not in special ed. Thoughts?
Man, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. I have cousins in special ed. I should text them. That's what they've been doing for 20, 25 years. I don't know. I'd have to know, like, what's the basis for this particular conversation? Like, what are the reasons? Are you actually failing classes, or are there specific things that we can now test for that give people an idea of what the person needs? Because, you know, for a long time, when we were kids, Dave, I mean, it would just be like, well, you know, he's at the back of the class,
yeah,
right? He's just getting the lowest grade in the class, and that's what it was.
Yeah, I don't know when we discovered autism or when we really became something mainstream, but I don't remember ever hearing that as a kid. It was just always the kids who probably had learning disabilities.
Right, right.
That they would just go, okay, well, you're going to be in special ed.
Right.
You have to keep in mind, too, there are a lot of kids who are in special ed because they have behavioral problems.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
right.
That's probably juice in the numbers a bit.
Did it mention anything being related at all to COVID?
It did not.
Like, was there a spike after that, or has it just been kind of a...
Didn't say. It sounds like it's been sort of a steady grow.
Okay. Probably, it's got to be at least some that we're better at identifying things, right? I mean, when we think about all of the things that go on health-wise, we're better at catching things. We have better testing procedures, better, you know, even medical things. Better scans mean you don't miss things that you used to miss.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like when glasses became more and more popular, it's like, oh, in my day, no one wore glasses. Mm. It's like, well, now we're just catching it. And
businesses are trying to lure people back from working at home by giving them super cool desks, yoga classes, fancy coffee, and DJ parties.
Okay.
Did they expand on the super cool desks at all?
The kind of desks that go up and down and you can stand or you can sit.
Those, yeah.
So the one you have.
Yeah, basically.
Is that the incentive?
That's why I'm here. It's called hot desking.
Yeah.
Isn't it just so crazy, the spread of like, we're begging you to come back into work, please. And then there are other jobs where it's just like, yeah, you should be lucky to have this. I don't know. It's just...
What this makes me think of is when Close was on the show, probably while you were on the show as well, right? So the last like 5, 6, 7 years... You may remember this talking about millennials, and he was like, oh boy, once these millennials, they're so entitled, once they get in the workforce, they're going to get hit by that buzzsaw, and they're going to jump into line, and it'll be yes, sir, no, sir, how high do you need me to jump? That's not been true. He was like, the corporate world will not bow to your needs, but I think it has in general.
Yeah, I mean, they're struggling to get people to even come into the office.
Yeah.
I like the fact that a little bit of the power has swayed a bit. You know, I mean, if you can justify a reason why people need to be in the office, well, then incentivize them. Don't just whine that people don't want to do it. Make it so people want to do it. I mean, that's just...
Do you feel like things are more... There's more parity between the workers and the owners now, just overall?
I think it's all depends on the business.
Yeah, I certainly...
None at all. Right, yeah, in some ways, not at all.
Because if we go back to there are three people for every job, it's going to go back to the way it used to be.
Right.
Yeah, I don't particularly feel like there's more parity. I mean, there's still, you know, bosses are still making way, way more than the laborers, and white collar still makes way more than blue collar, and, you know, speaking as someone on the lower rung, I don't feel like I have any more power or control over my situation than I did before the pandemic. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Although but that's why I say it's, I think it's field dependent, right? Like if you're going fast food, you get paid more than you used to because they desperately needed people to come do the job because nobody wanted to come do the job. And some states passed laws, like California passed laws saying you have to raise their minimum wage.
So another story today that they're saying it's basically McDonald's is the big 800-pound gorilla, and their $5 value menu is going to drive fast food prices to their lowest in 20 years. This summer, people are just going to be doing $3 and $4 and $2, and it's going to get out of hand.
You're already seeing more and more of that. I think like those are already starting to pop up. Like Wendy's is doing the $3 lunch $3 breakfast and stuff like that. You're going to see, I think, already those prices start to drop.
It's interesting too to see the consumer backlash to these lower prices because Starbucks announced that they were doing these $5, $6 pairings where you get an iced coffee and a croissant or something for $5, and people were mad. They're like, "You could have been doing this the whole time."
Yeah,
that's a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
So McDonald's is ending their AI drive-throughs
for now. So they had a contract with IBM to do these AI drive-throughs in certain areas, and it just didn't go according to plan. So for now, they're rolling it back. A lot of the headlines are like, "It failed," but McDonald's has said, "We are pausing this for now." I highly doubt they're going to completely abandon the entire thing.
I went through one, not a McDonald's though. I think it was a Burger King.
What was it like?
It's like talking to a person.
Really?
It takes a second. So you're like, they say, "How can we help you?" And then you say, "I want this, 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 and this." And then there's a little bit of a pause, and then they repeat it back to you, and you say, "Yes, that's correct." And they say, "Okay, it'll be this. Drive forward."
Anyone have any problems with that? Andrew, you seem like you might.
I don't. You know, I mean, I don't particularly like the AI takeover of that for the reasons that I've already said. A lot of people,
now, the majority, like, I'm people, on the record.
Well, the majority of people are fine with it, but there are people who do have, you know, where eating food is a life and death issue, and those people aren't helped by it, I think.
If your day sounds like,
"We need the report ASAP,"
you deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
.232 DGS on KMOX. We have Ricky Horton coming up next. Right now, we have our buddy Brad Young, attorney at law. So I know that this is the time of year when the cases are coming down from the Supreme Court. Got a couple of them today. Anything of note?
Well, the biggest case that came down deals with, it's called Moore versus U.S. And very quickly, the only reason this is important is because it deals with the concept of, can we have a wealth tax?
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole issue.
And what is that for people like me who aren't sure what that is?
Well, under the 16th, I think it's the 16th Amendment, you can only be taxed on income, right? You can only be taxed on money that you make, and that's how your taxes are paid. Under this concept of a wealth tax, which a lot on the left and the progressives are pushing for, you could be taxed on not only what you earn, but also what you own. So theoretically, under the concept of a wealth tax, you own a house, the house is worth $300,000, next year, the value of your house goes up to $400,000 because it's a hot market. You don't have any extra cash in your pocket, but you could be taxed on the wealth that you have, even though you've not, what's the term is, you've not realized that gain. And that's what Moore versus U.S. dealt with. It's a very esoteric issue. You don't want to dive into the weeds because these are messy weeds, but it involved investments over in Europe. And the bottom line is, and it's interesting, the court, it was a 7-2 decision. So it was a clear majority.
You don't see that much.
No. And they upheld this tax that came on during the Trump era to be able to tax in this very narrow area where people have investments overseas that aren't realized. But the court and Kavanaugh wrote and went out of his way to say, we're not dealing with the wealth tax. This cannot be construed to be dealing with the wealth tax. We're only conveying it with regard to this particular issue. And so they made it very clear that it's not going to be used so that the progressives can then start taxing people's wealth. Because if you think about it, in theory, your 401k plan goes up and you might be taxed on it. It's not like you've got more cash in your pocket. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what the court was trying to avoid in this decision.
What are we still waiting for? What are the big ones?
Well, one of the biggest ones is the Trump immunity and whether he's immune from this. I think this is going to be a very easy case to figure out how the court's going to do it. And it might even be a 9-0 decision. And in this instance, I'm really sure that the court is going to say, here are the lines for when the president has immunity. If he or she does this in an official act, they're immune. If they're doing something else in the furtherance of their campaign, they're not immune, generally. And then as it applies to Trump, since the lower court didn't make any findings, we're going to send it back down to the lower court to make findings, mm-hmm. which punts this to next year before a decision is made. So everyone's looking and screaming at the court for not coming down with this decision. It might come out tomorrow. I mean, Fridays are a good day. Friday at 5 p.m. is always a good day mm-hmm. for Supreme Court decisions. It could come out tomorrow, but I don't think it's going to be anything explosive.
Been wanting to get your take on the situation in Louisiana where they were required to put up the Ten Commandments. It has to be so big and a certain amount of font and so forth. I know you're a conservative guy. I think you're probably a religious guy. How does this hit you?
Well, and this takes a little bit of explanation because we have to look at it contextually from how the court has dealt with these issues in the past. But yeah, I'm a Christian. I've been a Bible school teacher at my church for the last, decades. So I come at it from a conservative Christian perspective. However, understanding that when you look at a law that requires a school to post something like this, if you look at it in the context of how the courts have dealt with this issue in the past, there's no question in my mind this will get struck down.
Is there a seminal case? I just don't remember it from law school. I'm sure there is.
There is. It's called Stone versus Graham. It's from 1980. And Kentucky passed the same law, almost the same law. And the way that Louisiana and even Kentucky tried to get around the obvious constitutional issues is that, first of all, they have private companies paying for it, so there's no state dollars involved. One of the things you'll remember from law school called the Lemon Test, Lemon versus Kurtzman, which lays out how the court could deal with these tricky issues of not establishing a religion. One of them is money. Is there money involved? So they avoid the money issue by having private donors pay for it. But where the Louisiana law falls short is this, and it's not complicated. As I understand the law, and I've read through it, there would be posters posted that specify how the law or how the Ten Commandments are significant in terms of the development of our judicial system, the development of our legal history, our legal precedent, all of that. And that all is absolutely true. However, if you look at what the court said in Stone versus Graham, they said it would be perfectly acceptable if you were studying, say, week 5 in civics class about how the Supreme Court was or how the Ten Commandments was seminal in terms of the development of our legal system, that would be fine. But if you're going to post something up on the wall and the nature of the Ten Commandments themselves, and if it stays there all year round, then that is a designation of how people are to worship, how people are to have one God and one God only and don't steal and all the things in the Ten Commandments, that prescribes a method of worship. And so even if it's in the context of historical importance, the fact that it's on the wall every day for the entire school year mm-hmm. means that it's not being done in the context of studying a particular subject, and therefore it's going to be unconstitutional. And I see that happening here.
Yeah, it seems very straightforward. It makes a lot of sense to me. As the resident agnostic, I don't mind at all if you're doing a religion class or you're even doing a pre-law class and you say, how did the Middle East establish their rules of law? Mm-hmm. Well, here are the five tenets of Islam. Let's study these. Let's understand how billions of people came to have Sharia law. Perfectly valid. Yeah. Here are the Ten Commandments. Here's the Judeo-Christian version of this. Perfectly valid to me. I have no problem with that at all. I don't have a problem with Christmas trees in public places. I don't have problems. I think so much of this, and I understand there's a difference between reality and legal esoterica, but I don't think anyone's going to lose or gain their religion from a Christmas tree. I don't think there's any kid who's going to look up at the board and go like, oh crap, I guess I'll stop coveting my neighbor's donkey. But esoterically, of course you have to keep the guardrails where they are, at least in my opinion.
But here, there's two sides to this coin, and that is, as I have no problem with stating that as a Christian and as an attorney, I have no problem saying this violates the First Amendment because it is a form of establishment of religion, all right? But the reverse is also true, and that is when you prohibit any of these things and say, no, my goodness, you can't even mention the Ten Commandments in here because it's at school, that is equally wrong because discussing it in the context that we're talking about is not the establishment of a religion, but it's looking at it in its historical context and why it's important. So as always, with so many things we see today, the extremes always want to go to the extreme. And I think it's a legal problem to have it there 24/7, 365 a year. But it's also a problem to say it can't ever be here. And if you bring that into the school system, you know, you're fired. That is equally wrong.
Just as a side topic, it's, I mean, not really getting into the meat of this, but you guys are both very clear. And I've not seen anybody else speaking from a legal perspective that doesn't seem to be also clear that this is a loser. Right? Like, this gets challenged, it loses. Is there any repercussion for wasting taxpayer money on this effort in defending it? Because there's going to be public money spent defending the implementation of this once it goes into court.
Well, first I need to answer, as my wife always says, it's good when the lawyers get paid. Okay? So I need to start from that premise. It's always good when the lawyers get paid. Now, coming from that perspective and moving on, there's going to be tax dollars at work here in terms of this, particularly in Louisiana. They're going to have to defend the challenges. But let's be realistic. Here's what the proponents in Louisiana are counting on. When you look at the makeup of the court in 1980, it's completely different today. And so you've got different justices. You've got arguably either a 5-4 or 6-3, depending on which side of the bed John Roberts wakes up on in the morning, on the right or the left side of the bed. And so they're looking at this and saying, we've got a better shot now at getting a favorable decision, just like it did with the Dobbs decision overturning Roe versus Wade. Okay. This is the same concept. And it's designed to say the last time this was really argued, the court was different. Let's try it again and see if we get a different answer. That's what's going on here.
Only about a minute left here, and this is so unfair because this is in the weeds as well, but I'm really interested in your take on this friendly battle going on between Justice Thomas and Justice Coney Barrett. Thomas is a true dyed-in-the-wool originalist.
Yes.
Coney Barrett's a little less so, but still an originalist. It's really interesting to me.
Well, it is, and in the context of these battles, personally, I think more is being made out of it than it really is in most instances. And I'm going to come back to the Ten Commandments, actually, in just a second. But in most instances, it's going to be a difference of degree, not substance. You know, how far is Amy Coney Barrett going to go down the originalist road? She's going to go down past the first subdivision, I can assure you. But is she going to go to the end of the originalist road? Probably not. But in the context of when this Ten Commandments case goes up to the Supremes, and it probably will, when it goes up there, this might be the type of case that demonstrates the difference between Barrett and Thomas, because I could see Barrett saying, I'm not going to go all the way with you, Justice Thomas, by saying this is fine because of the historical context, because I recognize presently that we can't establish a religion by posting the Ten Commandments 24/7.
Very good. Attorney Brad Young playing the part of Mark Reardon today. So over there at 97.1 for the afternoon. Thank you. Appreciate it, my friend.
Hey, my pleasure.
Time to talk to our pal Rick Horton. Hey, Rick, how you doing today?
I'm great, Dave. How about you?
Doing well. Great to talk to you as always. Before we talk about the great Rick Wood game tonight, let's just talk about the mess last night. Any major ideas coming off of that loss?
Well, I think the first thing to report is that things were not as bad as they could have been to Nolan Arenado getting hit on the elbow. He's listed as day-to-day. Ollie Marmol just spoke here at the media tent, which is where I am. Prepping for the game, and he said that he's day-to-day, won't be ready today. So that's the first bit of news, I would say. And, you know, the loss was frustrating. The Cardinals just didn't didn't hit with runners in scoring position, which kind of seems like the same old song, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure does. So tonight, of course, the Rick Wood game, we're covering it here on 1120, going to simulcast it on 96.3, our sister station down the hall. Rick, what does this mean to you as a big leaguer?
Well, it is very important to me. We had a chance to visit the Negro Southern League Museum today, and we had a program there, a luncheon there. Rob Manfred spoke, the mayor of Birmingham, and several players there, former players, and several former Negro League players are here. In fact, there's more former Negro League players here at one place at one time than they've had in the last 30 years. They've been able to pull them together here, and it's just, I mean, it's, you know, it's astounding for me to just to remember, contemplate just kind of where we are, were and where we are. So I think from just a human standpoint, I think this is important. It was reflected in things that Brendan Donovan and Mason Wynn just said just 5 minutes ago up at the microphone here in a pregame interview. They both talked about how sometimes there are things more important than you and being tired, because they were talking about the travel. This is bigger than us. And it's very cool to be a part of it. I feel the same way.
I'm excited about the aesthetic, Wheels. I don't know about you, but like seeing a big league game in basically a triple-A ballpark, that's pretty cool.
And the oldest ballpark still active, right? It's older than Fenway. Yeah. It's older than all of the major league stadiums. It's the oldest professional stadium still in existence. In fact, I'm sure you, it's probably in the notes and all that, Rick and Dave, you might remember it, but if you saw the movie 42, this was one of the stadiums they really used to recreate a lot of that.
Yeah. And let me just, I just walked the outfield fence. I got to tell you that. And when I say the outfield fence, I'm talking about the original outfield fence.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's very cool what they've done here. And it's got that old-time feel to it, which is very cool. But the original center field fence was 478 feet. and my first thought was, I could have pitched here. I'd be Cy Young if I was here. I mean, I got a lot of long fly balls to center, but And the wall is, I mean, it's a brick wall with barbed wire at the top of it, and that's kind of how the field was. So now, of course, they got regular dimensions now, and that's what we'll deal with. So they've done a good job of putting this on. I do love these showcase games. I think it kind of, again, sometimes it just gets you thinking about something beyond just the everyday, and I think that's good for us.
Rick, speaking of AAA, last night I was on my MLB app and I couldn't find anything, and I watched a AA game between the Trash Pandas and the Shuckers, and I absolutely loved it. I loved the aesthetic. I loved everything about it. How much time did you spend in the minors?
I was in the minor leagues for 4 years. I was in St. Petersburg, Gastonia, North Carolina, Little Rock, Arkansas, Louisville, Kentucky, and so then I also spent some time on the way down, too, which is not quite as much fun because you're already kind of used to the big league. Actually, I did. I loved even going back to the minor leagues and with the at that time, the Indians. And, I mean, it's just, you know, it's the small-town baseball. There's something about baseball that fits in a place like – and Birmingham's not a small town, but in places like Birmingham or Des Moines or Evansville, I mean, all those – cities that you play in, it just fits with minor league baseball.
Yeah, Birmingham would actually be a big city for minor league baseball. You know, like as you go up the ranks, the cities get bigger, right? So the AAA cities are bigger than the AA and the AA. Yeah, and that's not 100%, but
no, but it's about like that. Like Louisville, was like getting to the big leagues.
Right.
When I was in Louisville, you guys may remember that our team in Louisville, that John Rooney was the broadcaster for, was the first team in the minor leagues in the history of minor league baseball to draw 1 million fans in a year. I mean, it was pretty big league for us. It was.
Yeah, there's just something magical about it. Rick, you were in while things were pretty dire as far as the treatment of the minor leaguers. It must be nice for you to see things turn around.
Very different. I was remembering that the only other time, other than last night and today, that I've been in Alabama, the only ever, was driving through Alabama with a guy that I got sent down with. We both got sent down from the high A team in St. Pete to the low A team in Gastonia, and we took a circuitous route through his hometown in Phoenix City, Alabama, and that was kind of my only time I'd ever stepped foot in Alabama. So, and I thought, you know, they don't do that now. If you're going to move, they'll fly you.
Yeah.
But for us, we got in a car and somehow took 2 days to drive to Gastonia, and they all hang with them. So.
Rick, when you get the call up to the show or you get sent back down, is it present? I know every coach is different, every player is different, every situation is different, but in general, is it like we've seen on the movies, you know, kind of dramatic and have a seat, Rick, I got to talk to you about something?
Well, I think it used to be more direct. I mean, they just say the manager wants to see you and you go talk to him. So, and in some movies they'll depict that you get a little slip in your locker. That means you've been released. I think they did that before my time, but in my time it was just, you know, Whitey wants to see you. And it's like, well, okay, that's either good news or bad news. And it was more direct. Now they got these fun little games they do where they, you know, they have surprise ways of telling you. They'll tell a pitcher while he's on the field, and they'll surprise him, or they'll bring him in, and they'll lie to him at first. They'll say they're going down, and then say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I meant you're going up." I mean, yeah. So it's kind of,
and they
kind
film
of like
it all,
thing,
yeah.
And they'll film it, yeah, and then make it a big deal. So I missed some of that too, which I'm probably glad I did.
Yeah, cool. I wouldn't like I wouldn't like that at all.
Yeah, give me the direct thing. Don't be playing with me. Don't be playing with me.
Well, Rick, tonight's not just going to be a lot of fun for the Cardinals game. It's going to be meaningful to you and all the other big leaguers.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rick.
So let me say one other quick thing. Yeah. I saw Willie Mays play when I was a kid. I had a chance. My uncle took me to watch him play.
Man.
And I'm telling you, I am grateful that he gave me that opportunity.
No kidding.
Jealous. I'm so jealous.
All right, buddy. Have a great call.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.